In 2012, Beck Dory Stein was just scraping by in D.C. when a posting on Craigslist landed her improbably in the Oval Office as one of Barack Obama's stenographers. The ultimate D.C. outsider, she joined the elite team who accompanied the president wherever he went, recorder and mic in hand, eventually traveling to 45 countries around the world. On whirlwind trips across time zones, Beck forged friendships with a tight group of fellow travelers, young men and women who, like her, left their real lives behind to hop aboard Air Force One in service of the president. Beck shows us what the presidency looked like from her own particular vantage point, the corner of every room that Obama was in. Again, the name of the book is From the Corner of the Oval, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Beck Dory Stein to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yours is a fascinating story because you come into the Obama administration as it's well underway, and you just sort of get, you are, as you self-describe, as an outsider, and get swept up into being really at the side of the president a lot of the time. Over the time since you left the administration, what has it been like to ponder what that experience was like for you?
Well, that's why it was so fun to write the book, because I got to revisit 5 years of working in the Obama administration when I had never planned on going into the field of politics, let alone getting to work at the apex of power in the Obama White House. So it's been kind of a whirlwind, but it's been exciting, and it's, you know, especially given the current political climate, it's been a welcome change to revisit sunnier times during the Obama administration.
So give us a sense, you write about this, but give us a sense of what your job was as stenographer, what the responsibilities were, and ultimately who you were responsible to, who was the person that you were working for and with.
Sure. So the White House stenographers, we were responsible for public remarks and also off-the-record remarks made by the president, the first lady, the vice president, and the press secretary, and senior administration officials. That said, my priority was the president. We had 5 stenographers, 3 for the president, 1 for the vice president, and 1 for the first lady. And so I kind of was his professional stalker, as I like to joke, or his creeper. And I would follow him around with a microphone and a recorder and just make sure that if there was a member of the press in the room, that I was also in the room to make sure that any time he said something in public that we had an official White House transcript.
So how much of it for him, and I guess the question probably a lot of people want to know is what does your relationship become with him, given that you're there? You're taking notes of things that are on the record. And so what is the communication like when you are not on the record?
So I would kind of get shuffled in with the press into the Oval Office if he was going to make a statement with another head of state. And I had prime real estate. I got to stand behind the lamp with my microphone just to his left. And the first time I did that, he looked over and kind of gave me a head nod that was like, welcome to the team. But I wasn't an important member of the staff. I didn't even have access to classified information. And so it's never like we were properly introduced, which is why it was especially funny, because I went wherever he went on the road on domestic trips as well as international trips, that I found myself on the treadmill next to him. And I had just finished this crazy run and was slowing down, walking. And all of a sudden, this guy to my right goes, I thought you'd be faster than that. And I thought it was going to be Secret Service or another staffer. And I look over, and it's the president. And I could have said something really clever, but I was just totally starstruck and kind of ran out of the room. And as a gym person, I know the etiquette is to always wipe down your machine. And the most embarrassing part of the whole thing is that I ran out so quickly, I didn't even wipe down my machine. So then I was like, oh, my God, President Obama thinks I'm someone who doesn't wipe down their machine.
But he has to be used to that, of people being somewhat,
I think he's well aware. I think he's kind of tickled by it, where he comes up with these. He's like your best friend's very cool dad, where he's always catching you off guard. And every time you think, okay, I'm going to have the last laugh, he always gets the last laugh because he's just the funniest person in the room.
So you travel around the world with him, and you're there pretty much at every turn where something is going on. And I'm curious as to what it's like to do your job, but also be an observer and sort of what you take in an official capacity and what you take in just as a human being in a fascinating job.
Well, the best and worst part of my job was that I was paid to type other people's words, which was very cool because I was around a lot of very smart people, the president included, but I also have always wanted to be a writer, and so the beauty of my job was that because I was already typing down their words, I would go home at night and actually write down my own opinions about their words and also what it was like to observe them in the moment, because once I put my recorders down during an off-the-record briefing in the Roosevelt Room or during an interview in the Oval Office, I was actually, you know, I was supposed to be sitting there listening, which is the coolest thing in the world, to literally be a fly on the wall in the Oval Office during an interview. And so I would rush home at night and wake up early in the morning and write down exactly what it was like. So it was the coolest thing that could have happened for any normal person, let alone someone who has always wanted to write.
So while you're doing this, life happens, right? And you write about having a relationship within the White House while all of this is going on, which I assume, at least that's the sense I get in the book, that only complicates things.
It's always a problem when life gets in the way of your job. But because our job was our life, there was no difference. So for most people, it's like there's this effort to have a work-life balance. And when you work at the White House, it's not so much a job as a lifestyle, because we had to drop whatever we were doing as soon as, you know, our phone pinged and it was like, oh my gosh, this just happened. It happened on the other side of the world, but now the president needs to make a statement about it. And so I fell for the wrong guy at the wrong time. And even so, he was irresistible because we were traveling around the world together, flying on Air Force One, and it's even harder to fight that when you find yourself running through a rainstorm in Vietnam.
You know, like you do.
Yeah, the casual rainstorm in Vietnam with Anthony Bourdain on the side. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So how do you know that it's bad? Like, in the sense of even at the beginning, do you think, oh, we shouldn't be doing this?
Who knows? I guess it's different for everyone. But for me, it was I just was suddenly hit over the head with a 2x4, and we were kind of kindred spirits, and it's that crush that you're not supposed to have, which makes it that much harder to fight. It's the ultimate crush. You're going to get crushed.
and you know that you're going to get, I mean, you sort of saw that was coming, that, all right, this isn't going to work out.
Yeah, and that's part of why I wanted to write the book, was that everyone has had a Jason, and normally it's just, you know, my friends had their Jasons in high school and college, and I kind of made fun of them for it. And I waited till I was the ripe age of 27 before I got hit, you know, with a 2x4 of liking the wrong guy, which is why I wanted to write the book, because it's sort of inevitable at one point or another, and so it's that much more important to figure out how to navigate it and forgive yourself and make those mistakes that you have to make in your 20s.
So you make the point that Jason is not, you've changed the names, but it's safe to say this person was a mid-level West Wing staffer.
Yes, he was not in my department. He wasn't my boss in any way. He was in a different world altogether, but we got to travel together.
So when you think about it now in writing the book, does that have an impact on how you think about your job? I mean, do you think of it as, I mean, most people look back and say, oh my God, I work for the President of the United States, this is an amazing opportunity, or is it still tinged with what happened as a result of the relationship?
No, that was the beauty of getting to write the book, was revisiting the work of it. And also, as you read the book, you see me kind of coming out of this crush haze and seeing, oh, it really is about the work and it's about the job and what do I want out of my life and am I looking up and am I seeing what's really happening and what's really important. When you're traveling with President Obama, it's so easy to get swept up into, oh, I'm really hot right now, or I'm so hungry and I haven't eaten in the last three meals. And what's so cool about traveling with President Obama is that he was the ultimate reminder of, hey, we're in this country that we've never been to before. Let's take our time. Let's talk to the locals. Let's get a sense of what it's like to live here. So I took my cues from him.
One of the things that I read in a review of this book, and it struck me because I very much agree with it, is that throughout this book, we root for you. And I think
thank
that's
you. That's good to hear.
We're rooting for you. And obviously it's your story, but it is interesting because of your youth and because of what you're going through and the excitement of the job. You know, we obviously care, and I think it's a testament to your writing that it's something that we're so fascinated by and want it all to work out.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun to be the underdog outsider of the administration. It's more fun now.
So when it's all over, then how do you follow that up?
I'm in this Cinderella moment where I actually get to write a second book about whatever I want. So I'm excited to write another book that will not be about my personal life, at least not a nonfiction version. So I'm pretty excited.
So do you have a photo with the president?
I do. I have a couple. I got to fly on Marine One for my 28th birthday, which is the president's helicopter, and I wrote about that in the book.
Yeah.
And he ended up telling me all about the first time he met Michelle Obama. So that was really special, and Pete Souza took a photo of that. And then at the end of the administration, he was great and took photos with every staffer who stayed till the end. And so he met my parents a couple of times, and we have a departure photo in the Oval. And then he actually went to the great length of signing it and said something like, to my gym buddy, thanks for always working out with me.
Doesn't get any better than that, does it?
No, it definitely doesn't.
And at the end of the day, and I mean, this comes through loud and clear in the book, but just so people know, you have great respect for the man.
It was so nerve-wracking my first day because I stopped dead in my tracks and was like, oh my gosh, what if he's just not that great? What if he's a greasy politician who appears great but is slimy up close and in person? And within 10 seconds of being in the same room with him, it's like, oh my gosh, he's exactly who he appears to be, but better because he's in 3D and he's even funnier and warmer and kinder and he's extremely generous with his time and he treats everyone with respect and kindness. So I learned so much from him, not only about how to be a leader, but also just how to treat everyone in the room.
The other thing, too, and I'll end on this, which is that even though you're a stenographer, you are capturing the words that are being spoken. You're not working on policy, per se. But I assume, and it comes across this way, that you feel that you're part of something very special.
Yeah, I think I grew up playing sports. I played sports in high school and college, and so it was so cool to work for a president who understood that kind of team mentality. And he was at the helm of making everyone feel included, and we were all coming into work every day with this idea of we want to make the world and this country a little bit of a better place, and we do that one step at a time, even if we have what may seem like a really small job, even if it's just pressing record on a recorder and typing up a transcript. I'm part of the team and I'm helping President Obama forward his goals and his agenda.
The name of the book is From the Corner of the Oval. It is published by Spiegel & Graw. Beck Dorey-Stein, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Very nice to have you on the show. Thank you. Again, Beck Dorey-Stein's new memoir is From the Corner of the Oval. It is published by Spiegel & Graw. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.